Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you. And Lee, this is our very special new series. Tell us a little bit about what we got in mind for that.
This is the Marketing Superheroes series, and we'll be talking to the best and the brightest in marketing about all things marketing.
Well, and I cannot think of a better way to kick it off than to introduce this gentleman. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, CMO with QA Symphony, Mr. Jeff Perkins. How are you, sir?
Thanks. I did not realize this is for the best and brightest marketers. I might be in the wrong place, but nice to be here anyway, guys.
Well, if you got somebody else in the room, maybe we can get them on.
Right.
Well, Jeff, can you talk a little bit before we get into this about QA Symphony? What are you doing for folks?
Sure. So QA Symphony, as a company, we're a software company, and we create solutions that are really built for people that test software. So we make software tools for software testers. And, you know, so it's not a mass mainstream consumer product, right? We're serving a very specific niche in the market, but it's a very important niche. And if you think about your own lives and the applications you use, the worst experience is when you're trying to use an app or a piece of software and it breaks, right? Mm-hmm. And so we provide tools for the people who provide a very important role of testing software applications before they get into the hands of the end users. And, you know, really this helps companies as they're developing the software and pushing it out into production. It helps them make sure that that software is going to work and that software is not going to cost them revenue if it goes out and breaks, and it's not going to take down their entire business if it goes down and out and breaks. And you could think about, you know, some of the high profile headlines you may have seen about, like airlines having critical software bugs so people can't get their boarding passes or can't book flights. Amazon actually is a customer of ours. And we know that if the Amazon shopping cart goes down for even a minute, that's going to cost that company about $50,000 of revenue.
Wow.
So, QA and testing is really a critical part of the development process. And we build those tools that help the QA professionals test more thoroughly and test faster at the same time so they can get software out into the market to meet customer needs.
And then QA is quality assurance. That's what you're referring to.
Quality assurance, yeah. Yeah, quality assurance, software testing, they kind of those terms are used interchangeably.
Now, for you as a marketer, you started more in the agency world, right?
I did. I came up through the New York City agency grind, and I did that for about 10 years before I transitioned over into the client side.
So now what got you into this kind of startup-y environment?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I, like I said, you know, agency guy, and when you work in an agency, you become very accustomed to a high degree of chaos and kind of a lack of structure overall. And these are highly creative-driven organizations mostly. And so I've always really thrived in those kind of companies. And then I transitioned from the agency world into the client world. My first client-side job was actually at autotrader.com. And I was running a B2B marketing function there. And when I started, there was really nothing built out. And it was, so I got to come in and really build out a B2B marketing function from the ground up. And then I went to another technology company called PGI, which is a global, large global telecom provider. And at PGI, it was a similar thing where they had a marketing function, but it had kind of been blown up and they needed a restart. So I got to go in there and restart. So I've always been in these situations in my career where I've been kind of working in very unstructured environments that needed a lot of foundation to be poured. And that kind of led me to an opportunity where I am today, which is more of a startup. All right. When I joined, we were a startup. Now we've recently closed a Series C for about $40 million. So I don't know if we qualify as a startup anymore, but we've grown from kind of, about $1 million a year from when I started to well over $10 million. So we've really had a nice run since I've been here. in growing our business and growing our brand and being able to attract a lot of blue chip customers to our company.
Now, how have you seen the role of marketing change over the years?
Well, for me, marketing has really shifted a lot. I mean, I came up doing television advertising for Procter & Gamble. So, you start every year and you say, all right, here are the four TV ads we're going to produce, and that's about all you're going to do. And then, I saw kind of the internet start to emerge as an advertising medium, and then you saw, marketing technology start to come in. So the marketing world today, I believe, is just fundamentally so different than it was, the 20 years ago when I really started my career. I mean, today, you have so much data, you have so much tracking, you have such an explosion of different tools you can use to be a marketer and different advertising options you have as a marketer. It's really overwhelming, actually. It's very hard today to be a marketer and a marketing leader. Because you don't really know where to start, right? You don't know what you should do, when you should do it, and it's very easy to get lost in this kind of marsh of tools and tech and advertising and Google. So it's never been, I think, more challenging to be a marketer. But at the same time, there's never been more opportunity for us as marketers to get really show the impact of our programs, to show the impact of our initiatives on company revenue. And that's a really exciting thing. It used to be very abstract, where you would do a TV ad and you would have certain quantitative testing that showed if your ad hit a certain threshold, it would had the potential to drive the business or drive market share. Today, we're just in a different world where you can actually track specific campaigns back to specific metrics to see if you're driving leads, that are actually converting into a pipeline and are converting into eventual customers. And that's very exciting. It's very exciting because you could actually show a CEO, you could show your board the impact that increased marketing investment can have on your organization.
Now, do you find that it's easier now to have more of an impact without the large budgets of maybe kind of years gone by?
You can. I mean, like any good marketer, the more money you spend, generally the bigger impact you can make. So it's not like you can just cut all your marketing and just put everything into Google or put everything into one specific tactic. The great thing today is that you could really get sniper focused on your target audience and on that buyer you're trying to reach and influence. So rather than spending inefficiently on a lot of different media, rather than spending on media where you know your audience is, but you know there's lots of other people there too that you don't really need to reach, but you pay a premium to be there, today, it's very easy to get to very targeted publications, to get to very targeted watering holes where your audience is, where they're consuming content, where they're learning about products and services, and have a presence there. And so you're eliminating a lot of that inefficiency that used to exist in a lot of marketing programs. Now, I say that at the same time, there is no magic bullet when it comes to tracking, when it comes to attribution. So, well, we have more data than we ever had as marketers. It's still really challenging to pull it all together and tie it all together. And there will always be certain parts of marketing that are just not trackable. It's great that you have more ways to reach your audience and you could do it more efficiently. At the same time, marketing to some extent has to be sort of a leap of faith on some of the things you're doing. You have to use your judgment. You have to use your experience and say, I think this is going to build our brand. This and building our brand is going to drive more leads, which is going to help our metrics overall and is going to help our revenue overall. So with marketers, it's always that balance of wanting to do things that are highly trackable, highly accountable at the same time. Understanding, not all marketing can be highly trackable and highly accountable.
And that's kind of the trap nowadays. And I would imagine it's even a bigger trap in a technology firm that because you can measure so many things, then everything becomes worth measuring. And there is still some art to this. It's not all science.
Right. I mean, if you were just as a marketer going to do only measurable marketing tactics, you would probably be missing huge opportunities to build your business. So you basically have to do both. And a lot of times it's the marketing leaders that have to advocate for the things that are maybe less trackable. We go, for example, to a lot of trade shows. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that at every trade show we go to, we get a lot of leads and we bring those leads back, and then we go and try to set meetings and try to convert those leads into customers. Mm-hmm. But I also know that by being at a trade show, we're getting massive exposure to our target audience. And the value of that exposure may not show from the results of just the leads generated at that trade show. So you have to kind of measure it both ways. You have to say, all right, we got some good leads at this trade show, but as we go to more and more of these shows, we're getting more awareness. So as prospects are evaluating software or QA software, we're going to start making short lists for that evaluation that maybe we didn't make a year ago when we didn't go to all these trade shows.
Right, where you didn't have the presence. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, like, it is that balance of making sure you're doing the right things for the business, and you're not just putting all your eggs in the highly trackable basket, right? you're going to do a lot of that. You know, it's great that you have things like paid search and other kinds of advertising that has a lot of data behind it, and you could show a clear ROI. But you do have to do those brand building things, those things that are going to generate the awareness and interest in the market that might not be as trackable.
And that as a CMO, that's one of those things that you kind of have to, as a leader, sell that in, that, you know, where a lot of people are looking to have the proof. They want to see proof before they do that leap of faith. And some of this is a leap of faith.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I have peers that I talk to who, only do the brand stuff, and they just, their CEO is all bought into the brand stuff, and they're less focused on the more trackable type advertising. I have other peers who are the exact opposite, where they're only going to do things that they can track and show a direct ROI. But I would say CMOs and marketing leaders have to be somewhere in the middle, where you're doing both, right?
Right.
You don't want to totally reject the brand. You don't want to totally, do things that are not trackable. So you have to always find that balance and find the right mix that's right for your business based on, the stage of where your company is. You know, at a startup, when I started at QA Symphony, I knew we needed to kind of get awareness, because there were a lot of, there's always evaluations going on of QA software. And if people don't know who we are, we're never going to make the shortlist, right? So I could buy, hundreds of thousands of dollars of paid Google ads, but if no one's ever heard of QA Symphony, they probably won't click.
Right.
But if they saw QA Symphony at a trade show and they've read about us in the media, and then they're in the market to evaluate, and, there's QA Symphony when I did a search in Google, you're increasing your odds that there's going to be a conversion point there. So that's how marketing always has to work together.
Now, how does marketing and sales align in your organization?
We align very well. So we're very focused on delivering leads to the sales organization. I mean, our business is built on having sales reps that are receiving leads and then are working those leads through, a full, all the way to close one. In our organization, actually, marketing sources about 75% to 80% of our new business revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty good friends with our sales team. They're very happy for us to keep delivering these high quality inbound leads that we're kind of bringing in from our campaigns. And the more time they're spent working those, they have to basically outbound less and cold outbound less. In today's market, it's really hard to get people on the phone. It's hard to engage people who don't want to be engaged. But we found that through a combination of having really strong content, having really good webinars, having a strong presence on search engines, being on a lot of the key websites in the category that talk about software testing and the tools that are out there for software testing, we're able to really drive a very high volume of high quality leads in for our sales team that they're then able to convert and into customers for us. So we, you know, I meet with, you know, our sales team, you know, constantly. I mean, we have every Monday, we start the week with a meeting between sales and marketing to talk about where we are on leads, where we are on opportunities, to make sure we're all aligned. And then we have a lot of other initiatives that require a lot of collaboration. So we have, we're doing account-based marketing where we're targeting about 300 different companies. And that doesn't work unless you have the sales team aligned with what you're doing. So we're sending out direct mail to target companies and target contacts. And then we expect our SDRs, our sales development reps, to then follow up to make sure they receive those direct mail packages. And if you don't have that good alignment, that whole program falls apart.
Right, it breaks down.
They need to know when they're calling, how they're calling, what their talk track is. And so it's just critical for us to be aligned. And we really, I think we work very, very well with our sales, with our peers in the sales organization.
Now, are you seeing that account-based marketing as a shift of maybe how it was done previously, maybe in your agency days, as opposed to how it's being done nowadays, where there is that alignment between sales and marketing, where you are collaborating? And back in the day, there used to be kind of silos of, you know, the sales guys complaining about the marketing people, and the marketing people, the leads aren't good, and the sale and the marketing people saying that they can't close, and you know, it was kind of more adversarial. Are you seeing more collaboration nowadays because technology kind of is really encouraging you to work together more to get, you know, so your goals and incentives are more aligned?
Yeah, it's not just that about technology. It's really about the business and marketing realizing that they're not going to be successful unless sales is successful. I mean, that's the biggest, I think, change in mindset that I've seen. In the past, you know, the philosophies were, you know, marketing does the air cover through trade shows and brand campaigns, and then, you know, sales hits the ground and does their outbounding and cold calling, and they didn't really ever have to work together, right?
Right.
But as long as they did their silo jobs well, you know, the business was
right. No one noticed.
Well served.
Right.
Right. But what's happened today is that the most effective organizations are finding that alignment between sales and marketing actually will help you drive more revenue for the business. And it makes sense. You know, if marketing is targeting a certain company, sales has to target that certain company.
Right.
And if they're not doing that, then you're out of alignment, and then sales is just doing their own thing, marketing is doing their own thing, and neither are going to be as successful as they could be. And so that's why when we look at campaigns, we want to make sure that our sales team understands what we're doing, that they have the right talk tracks, they have the sales plays. And so when we launch something, we launch an initiative, there's a clear follow-up process. And then we're able to look at what we did and track it and see, did that work better than previous campaigns, and measure them against each other.
Now, when you're using, can we talk a little bit about account-based marketing you mentioned earlier? Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what is that and how are you using it?
Right. You know, account-based marketing is one of the big buzz terms in the industry. All it means is rather than targeting, you know, every account, you're being very specific with where you're spending your time and resources against certain key accounts where you have a high probability that you're going to win. So for my company, we look at prospects that fit a certain profile, right? They're prospects that are in certain industries like software, financial services, e-commerce. We have a really good success with those specific industries. Then we look at what tech stack they're on. You know, so what tools are they using today within their company to do software testing and development? And we find that we fit very well into certain tech stacks. So if they're using Atlassian tech stack, for example, Atlassian makes a product called Jira, which is a very popular tool for developers. So if they're using the Atlassian tech stack, we know that's a great prospect for us because 80% of our customers are also using Jira. And we also look at people who are on tech stacks of like legacy providers. So they might be on Hewlett Packard. We also know we do very well in deals competing against Hewlett Packard because we have a more modern solution and they have more of a legacy solution. So we look at all the companies, and there's plenty of data providers out there today that give you visibility into that tech stack, which is great. We use a tool called Node in our company, and Node tells you exactly what companies what the companies are using, and that really helps you pinpoint, okay, I want companies that have, you know, over 500 employees are in these key verticals and are using this tech stack. So then you build your ideal prospect list based on that. And then you put your campaigns together, right? And you put your campaigns together against, you know, certain personas, like I'm targeting an executive, or I'm targeting a director, or I'm targeting an end user. And then you coordinate with your sales guys, you know, we're doing this marketing campaign. You need to reach out at these key touch points. And when you do it well, and it's all orchestrated, the results you get can be really, really 2 to 3 times what you got by everyone just, spraying and praying every possible prospect on the market. So it's a much more strategic approach to prospecting than I think we've ever had the ability to do before. And the reason we have that ability today is just, you know, there's just a lot of really good tools out there. You have these predictive analytics tools, you have marketing automation tools, and these are all solutions that really help you get much more focused on targeting fewer high quality, high potential prospects than just boiling the ocean.
Now, when you're doing something like that, especially when you're starting or introducing that in an organization, don't you have to change the metrics of what is the most important thing? Because like at one point it might've been, oh, I got to get in front of, you know, a lot of people. And now you're saying, look, I only care about these 300 companies or 500 or whatever the number is. And we just got to kind of immerse ourselves in that ecosystem of those companies and forget about everybody else. And that's kind of a mental shift, isn't it, for a lot of executives that maybe aren't in marketing?
It is, because, you know, but you always have to be evolving your metrics. Like when I started at QA Symphony, the only metric that people really looked at was your website traffic. Like, how much website traffic do we have? And that's not a really useful metric for gauging anything other than, well, maybe, you know, we have more brand awareness, so now we have more traffic. You know, and then you're looking at how many inquiries did we get? And then you're looking at, well, let's not just look at total inquiries. Let's look at segment. What kind of inquiries? Are we getting free trials? Are we getting content downloads? Are we getting request pricing forms? And then you start looking at metrics like which of those inquiries are converting into qualified leads. And then that becomes the most important metric. So I think there's a journey that marketers have to go through with their executive team on, constantly evolving the metrics to get to metrics that are going to be much more meaningful to the business. Because if you're, you know, if you do a campaign and you drive a ton of inquiries off a campaign, and you're all high-fiving that, wow, we got 3,000 leads off of this thing. But if those leads are not at all a good fit for your ideal customer profile, then that campaign was not a success, right? So marketers today need to think about not think about volume, right? Not think about quantity, but it's really all comes down to, am I driving quality leads that are converting for my sales team? And what defines a quality lead too. So you have to really spend a lot of time studying who your customers are, what kind of customers you are best suited to serve, and then figure out, all right, if that's your ideal customer profile, how do we go get more of those customers? And that's really the exercise. And then once you figure that out, the metrics should kind of follow. So if you've defined your addressable market, how many more customers are there to get in that addressable market? And then always tracking towards that.
And it's always be testing, right? You're always kind of tweaking this. It's a never-ending exercise.
It is. And it creates challenges at the same time. I think every year, you have to constantly look at your forecast at the end of each quarter and say, are the assumptions I made to build the annual forecast based on lead gen, are those assumptions still valid? Because sometimes they're not.
Right.
Like when we started this year, we were looking at how many total MQLs, marketing qualified leads, do we need to drive for the business? And then after the first quarter, we said, well, it's not as important to drive total marketing qualified leads. We need to actually look only at the marketing qualified lead segment for companies above 500 employees. And so that changed the way we could forecast, right?
Right.
So it's always an evolution of how you have to look at your metrics. And you really, you know, I think marketers have to be very intellectually curious about the data. There's so much out there today. You know, I think a lot of the best marketers today are the ones who are just data nerds, right? The ones who are able to really study the data and make sense of it and then communicate that out to their board, to the CEO, to the CFO. So they're able to get buy-in that, oh, actually what we're doing is working. And here's the data and proof that shows that it's working. And that's why you need to invest more in these areas, or that's why we're going to reallocate this marketing budget into this tactic. And that's really, you know, that's really how marketers have to work today. Otherwise, you're going to be, you know, if you just think you're going to set a plan in January, you're going to keep that plan going through December, you're probably not going to be that successful. Or maybe you'll be successful, but you're probably not going to be as successful as you could be. Because, you know, every couple of months you need to think about course correction and what could we be doing differently? What could we be doing better to help drive better results for the company?
And you mentioned early in the conversation that, you know, at one time your career was, let's make these four commercials and call it a day. And that was your year. And now you're having to kind of tweak a little bit as you go, almost not month by month, but maybe quarter by quarter at least, to just make sure that you're on the right track. I mean, you're optimized, really.
Yeah, you have to. And we're always looking at everything we're doing and how do we optimize it. You know, one thing that is really fun that you can do today is use tools that let you A/B test parts of the website, A/B test your email campaigns, because you never know what you're going to do or what specific lever you can pull that'll all of a sudden drive a lot more conversions. And one example from my previous company, PGI, we just did a test where we said, well, what if we put little video thumbnails on a page, and we say this page is going to have a video thumbnail on it with a video that pops up, and we're going to A/B test that with a page that doesn't have a video thumbnail.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that just by doing that small change, we increased the conversions on that page by like 350%. And so you just never know what levers you can pull that are going to drive better results for your business. So yeah, as a marketer, you need to think of yourself kind of as like
a scientist,
you're almost like a scientist,
right?
You have to always be testing and tweaking and looking at different ways that you can design pages and add content to pages that'll continue to help drive more leads for the organization or create just better outcomes from all the different marketing tactics you're doing.
Now, do you have any advice for maybe young marketers, maybe people either in college, coming out of college, the skills they need, what do they need to be doing in order to, you know, maybe eventually be a CMO?
Right. It's a great question. I think I look back on my career, and I was very lucky right out of college to get into an agency like Saatchi & Saatchi and get to work on a client like Procter & Gamble. And, you know, that's, you know, going to work at Procter & Gamble today is probably not that sexy. You know, people want to go work at, you know, Google,
right,
or Facebook or some cool tech company. But really working at Procter & Gamble or working at, you know, an agency that served Procter & Gamble was, I think, a very valuable experience for me, because it Procter & Gamble does everything the right way. And they're really good at strategy. They're really good at critical thinking. They're really good at data and analytics. And I learned a ton. I worked on Procter & Gamble business for about 5 years. And I feel like that set a great foundation for growth. And you know, it was a very general education on business and marketing. But without those skills, I don't think I could have been as successful as I've been over the course of my career. So that's probably one thing. It's not thinking about, oh, I want to go and become a certified Marketo, you know, expert, or a certified get certified in Google AdWords and learn these very specific skills. But it's more about the broader, you know, the broader strategy thinking and learning how to do that kind of work earlier on in your career, I think will serve people well long term. Now, if you're passionate about search, or if you're passionate about social media, by all means, specialize, because there's going to be very, very good markets for people with specialized skills going forward. And you could probably make a lot of money doing that. But if you want to be a marketing leader, if you want to be a CMO, you have to really have a very broad skill set. And the best having a broad skill set usually isn't very well served by a very narrow focus on one specific tactic. So I would say go broad. Think about, your education. I got an MBA. I thought that was an invaluable experience to get as a marketer. Really exposes you to a lot of different parts of business, rounds out your marketing side with the financial side. I think there's a lot of things aspiring CMOs need to do to have a very well-rounded skill set that'll set them up for success in the future.
Now, are there any blogs or anything you read, any thought leaders that you find interesting?
Yeah, I'm constantly reading marketing blogs, reading marketing content, going to marketing conferences. I'm a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk. I really like Neil Patel. Sangram Vajray, who is the CMO of Terminus, is a friend of mine. He has really, really great content that they're doing at Terminus about account-based marketing. I read a lot of that social selling that's done by people like Jill Rowley. As a marketer, there's no shortage of content out there. So it's just, I love what they do at Marketing Land. I think they have really good content there. There's a guy named Steve Cook who writes for CMO.com. That's a great publication for people who want to be CMOs. And I'm also, beyond just the content that you read, I think it's important to have a strong peer network. And I'm actually in a CMO community here in Atlanta. It's called the Marketing Leaders of Atlanta. And it's led by a woman named Lisa Norell, who is a fairly well-known marketing thought leader and author. And really, that is incredibly high value because you're not just reading, a thought leader on a blog. You're actually interfacing with other people that are going through the same challenges that you have, and you're getting advice and best practices. And that's been one of the really best experiences I've had as a CMO is just, working closely with other CMOs and, learning from what they're going through and helping apply that to some of the things that we're doing here at QA Symphony.
So what do you got going on now? What are you most excited about?
We have a lot of great stuff going on for the rest of the year. We're kind of about to enter into our big trade show season in September and October. So we have a lot of exciting trade shows coming up. Probably the biggest one, it's a trade show called Atlassian Summit. So they're one of the big partners that we work with. So that's going to be really exciting. And we're doing a pretty thorough review right now with a consultant of our whole lead gen program. And we're looking to do some things a little bit differently in Q4. So when you're a small company and you're kind of trying to build your business, you bootstrap a lot of things and you kind of have to cut corners a lot of times, mostly because of cost, because you just can't afford to do these really huge big bang programs. But now that we've matured into a larger company, we have some pretty big investors, we've raised a fair amount of money. We want to scale to be a much bigger company than we are. And so we're spending a lot of time and energy now, not just on the tactical day-to-day, but focusing on the future and how you build a foundation for growth within our marketing program, within our lead gen program, making sure we have the appropriate tech stack that's going to be able to serve the organization, making sure we have the right structure, people, SLAs with sales. So that's a really big initiative that we have going on right now that I'm really excited about, that I think is really going to set us up for future success.
And if somebody wanted to have a conversation and learn more about QA Symphony, what's the best way to find you guys?
A couple things they can do. Obviously, they could go through the website and just contact us for a demo or do a free trial. That's really easy to do. If people want to talk to me about QA Symphony or about anything else, probably the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. It's just linkedin.com/JeffPerkins1. So yeah, I'm happy to talk with anyone about QA Symphony, about marketing, and happy to share kind of what we've learned and hopefully help some people.
Jeff, this is Stone talking. It has been an absolute delight having you on the show this afternoon. Thank you so much for hanging with us and visiting.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much. It's been great to be with you, and look forward to hearing this show and other shows in the future.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, CMO with QA Symphony, Mr. Jeff Perkins, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.